Welcome to the WP Tonic This Week in WordPress and SaaS podcast, where Jonathan Denwood interviews the leading experts in WordPress, e-learning, and online marketing to help WordPress professionals launch their own SaaS.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show. This is episode 919. We really have got a guest that I've been looking forward to have a chat with. I know I do regularly say that, but I really do mean that this week. We got Ryan Robertson from us, from Right Blogger. He's a really, really popular and quite famous blogger expert. We're going to be discussing blogging in 2024, AI. We're going to be discussing his journey with Right Blogger. What are some of the key things he's learned in trying to build his own SaaS platform, which he can share with you. So maybe you can avoid some of those and some of the surprises on his journey. So, Ryan, would you like to quickly give us a quick, like, 10, 20-second intro of yourself?
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me. This is awesome. I'm pumped to be here. And, yeah, I've been blogging for the better part of a decade, probably approaching more like 12, 13 years now. And my blog, my content that I create has kind of just tracked my journey, what I'm learning, what I'm interested in. And these days, I'm now pretty much teaching blogging, and with Right Blogger, we're creating the tools you need to do the things we wish we could do for free or on a budget back when we first got started.
That's fantastic, and I've got my great co-host, Kurt. Kurt, would you like to quickly introduce to the new listeners and viewers? And we're getting a few more recently. So
We are. My name is Kurt Von Onen. I own an agency called Mañana No Mas and a podcast of the same name. I focus largely on learning and membership websites in the WordPress space and work directly with WP Tonic and the good folks at Lifter LMS.
And Kirk's been a gracious guest. I've been visiting in Windy, Kansas for the past week. This my tribe. It was a bit of a journey, but I quite enjoyed Kansas so far. So it's been great to see Kirk in the flesh. It's great as well. So before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great show, I've got a couple of major messages from our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks. I just want to point out we've got a couple great offers from the major sponsors, plus a created list of the best WordPress plugins and services aimed at the WordPress professional. You can get all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you ask for, my beloved tribe? Probably a lot more, but that's what you could give up. I'm sorry to disappoint. I've made a career of it, my beloved tribe, but you're used to it. So let's go straight into it, Rob. So you gave us a quick intro, but what led into the crazy world of blogging, online marketing, podcasting, all the things you do so well, Rob? What led into this?
I am one of the very few people that can actually point back to college as being a really pivotal investment for me. I had an internet marketing teacher calling the class internet marketing's funny enough, right? Kind of dates me. This would have been in like 2009. And this professor, he just had a lot of foresight. And so the first thing we did, we sat down, we registered domain names. And so I grabbed my blog, which is ryrob.com, just my nickname. And ever since then, I've been blogging pretty much. I've had some phases where I've, you know, slowed down, taken a step back. I think anything that you do for a decade and change, it's normal to have seasonality and stages to it. And so I'd say one interesting tidbit from my journey has been that the way that I monetize my blog has also changed every, let's say, year and a half, 2 years. Like the major driver of revenue sort of shuffles around a bit. There's, you know, 5 to 10 usual suspects in the bucket of generating income from a blog, I'd say. But those top ranking ones do shuffle, which is fascinating. It's always changing.
So what are some of the main ways that people are making any money from their blogs in 2024? What's the top 2 to 3 ways, Rob, in your opinion?
I think there's different categories on how we could approach this one. But from my perspective, the easiest way to turn on some income from your blog in the short term, let's say if you just get started first few months, whatever that looks like, is selling your services. So if you have a skill, if you have particular experience set, let's say you're a marketer, you're a writer, a designer, a developer, you have some sort of trade, a craft, selling your services from your blog and creating content to kind of do that demand pull, creating some stuff for social channels, maybe YouTube, to drive people to your site on topics related to what your service is, your skill is. And then saying, you know, up in your header menu, work with me, hire me, something like that. That I think is the most approachable, easy way without setting expectations that kind of set yourself up for disillusionment, because all the other stuff, you know, Kurt, I know you know this for sure, memberships, communities, this stuff, it takes time to monetize, to build a group that people want to, say, pay to be a part of, or a course even. If you begin creating digital products, which are great, it does just take time. You have to create the curriculum, you have to bring in the audience, you got to nurture people, establish trust. And there's just way more stuff, I guess, that goes into that. But you know, to bring my ramble to a close here, affiliate marketing is also still really popular and works great for me, a lot of people I know, but there's so much more nuance to this stuff these days. You can't just publish a blog post with a bunch of affiliate links and hope that Google's gonna rank you and then, you know, generate free money as a result. Like, you gotta get way more creative. And I like to think that the best way to approach affiliate marketing these days is with a video first content creation kind of process, where you can use video and then use things like the tools inside WriteBlogger. Other AI tools do this too, but repurpose that video into blog posts, social clips, other ways to promote your content on LinkedIn. And these are the kinds of ways that I like using AI basically to help me do more these days.
Yeah. So we've got on this particular podcast, it's like I say, it's aimed at the WordPress community, basically. So how do you see WordPress in the blogging? Do you see it still as the premier platform for blogging, or do you think that's changed at all?
I think for, you know, if we want to call it traditional blogging, which is maybe say text content first or text content forward, that I think absolutely is still WordPress is the home. It's the king. I mean, there are no other like CMS platforms really that I think are competitive with WordPress, and the free ecosystem of plugins and ways that you can just really like tack stuff onto your business easily. If you're from WordPress and you're a publisher and you're trying to drive revenue from bringing people to your website, I think that's the best. But what case could be made for if you're going to create video content only? If you don't even want to think about written content as a, you know, kind of like newer age blogger, then going straight to platforms like YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, like really investing most of your time on those platforms is probably the best move. But I think that having a blog is the smartest home base you can ever have, because you get to control that platform. You know, let's say YouTube or Instagram, TikTok gets banned, right? I mean, that's a very real possibility. And if you're totally platform dependent, you can end up pretty screwed. So I do recommend always having a blog and having a newsletter, allowing people to sign up and get more of your like personal updates. That's still super important. And WordPress is pretty impossible to beat, in my opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Ryan. I think having your own website, your own and digital sovereignty, having as much as possible, but using these other platforms as a way of promoting yourself is totally fine. But I think we've seen this over the years, different platforms rise and then decline, and just saying something and they get complaints. And if they do ban you, it's a nightmare trying to get back on. Over to you, Kurt, for the next question.
Well, I'm just glad Ryan didn't mention Tumblr as one of the great blogging platforms out there. So,
you know, I had a Tumblr blog. I tried that one out.
Yeah, I had a Tumblr too. And then I went out of curiosity. I was like, I wonder if that's still up. And sure enough, it was removed. I'm gone. So when you think about like writeblogger.com, right? So that's your thing, writeblogger. So just tell us, like, what does it do? Who is it aimed at? And does it have a position fit, you know, with that WordPress space we were just talking about?
Totally. So WriteBlogger is a collection of AI-powered tools, for the most part AI stuff. There's some keyword research things in there that use different APIs and data sources, but it's basically our collection of the 75-plus tools that we wish we had when we started blogging, you know, 12, 13 years ago. And I built the platform with my friend Andy, who I'm actually visiting right now in St. Louis. So we have a lot of fun working on this one together. And we really like, we position it to be an inexpensive option for people, because this is another big thing. I used to like password share with five people on Ahrefs and SEMrush, these tools that are, you know, they add up very quickly to being like $100 a month or something. So we have a really affordable, unlimited plan, no tricky pricing crap, no usage stuff. It's like $29.99 a month. You can use literally all the tools as much as you want. Go nuts. You can have as many sites that you're creating content for in there as possible. But for the most part, like really, this is just the backbone now of my AI-assisted content creation process. Different tools, you know, article writers, things that turn YouTube videos directly into blog post drafts, like. And then from there, it kind of trickles down to here's all the LinkedIn posts you need. Here's the Instagram captions. And so just trying to make the, especially repurposing content, trying to make that really easy for creators.
Yeah. As you answered the question, you actually spurred a follow-up question, but it seems a little removed, so forgive me. But you said unlimited, like the number of sites. And so then I instantly in my brain went, you know what? People might be interested in that. Like from a professional blogging perspective, I think people struggle with staying on point. Like your blog's about this. Next thing you know, like my own personal blog that I thought was wonderful ended up being about leadership, business, travel to Italy, been to Spain, you know, it's like, and people would look at my overall list and go, what the hell does this guy focus on? He's all over the place. So how do you coach people on that? Do you say, hey, I have separate websites, or do you do different categories, or how do you approach that?
I mean, honestly, in the product inside WriteBlogger, it's definitely a free-for-all. Like if you want to make content for tons of different sites, you can. But what my personal advice is, I always recommend people spend much more time going deep on less things than say having 10, 15, 20 websites. This is coming from someone who has more websites than that. I just don't touch them as often because I've like seen the value and the ROI on just staying super focused on one, maybe two sites. And sometimes I shuffle in some stuff here, you know, like I have a hiking blog. If I go on a great hike and I take a bunch of photos and, you know, it's fun to me to edit together a little video, like I'll do that. But it's all sort of based on like, what are your expectations, right? So if you have a site that generates income or a site that you want to generate income for you somehow, really focusing all your efforts on tinkering with that, trying out different ways of generating revenue, figuring out how to monetize with your people, get more traffic in the door. Like, that's a very full-time job with just one site. So you really splinter your effectiveness when you're trying to do it on a bunch of properties at the same time.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Jonathan, over to you.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up question before I go on to the main question, Ryan. We found at WP Tonic, we kind of pitch ourselves as hosting plus, where we provide all the tools to enable you to build an e-learning or community-focused membership website. We provide all the plugins, the superior hosting, everything. But a constant theme with us is when I'm consulting people, and so the same with Kurt, is there's a lot of balls when you're starting a membership or you're starting a blog business. There's a lot of balls, and people tend to get sucked into all the processes, the marketing optimization. They get sucked into, for understandable reasons, about the look, the logo, the marketing optimization, this, that, the other, and they haven't really got their first student or their first paying client, whatever it is. Have you observed that? And where's the, can you maybe give some advice if you think it's possible where to find the balance? Because I'm not diminishing some of these things that are important, but so many of the clients that we consult, they just go on a bit of a journey and they get a little bit lost and frustrated.
Yeah. I'll give some really hard truth here because I've had to go through confronting this myself, is that tools, let's call it tools, right? Perfecting the look, feel, design of all your creations. Tools are often an excuse to avoid looking at the truth. And I think the truth is often and I've experienced this myself, the truth is often that we're not quite ready to sell that course, to make that thing at the level that we feel, you know, it needs to be in order for people to pay us for it. And so I personally really like, I try and go into the hard stuff first and actually like go validate that someone's going to pay me for educating them on this topic. Let's say if you want to validate a course idea or a consulting service, go get fucking paid for that. Don't make the course first and then figure out how to bring an audience to it. Like, actually just confront the most difficult, challenging part that I think most people know, you know, like we all know, oh, that's going to be the hard part, but it's easier to avoid it and to go dig super deep into perfecting the look and the feel of something or creating all the course curriculum, for example. But go into the hard stuff. It's worth it. You'll also learn how much you like it, right? Like maybe you get super burnt out trying to sell this thing. So
is it possible to advise somebody that's going down that journey? Because I found an enormous amount of resistance. Or do you just have to lay off and they're just going to have to learn the hard one?
I think you can say your piece, you can give your advice, and then it's over to that person to figure out how they want to incorporate that or not. Or maybe they'll come back to that advice in 6 months or a year after they try things their way first, let's say. So I like to just, you know, deliver some truth in a nice, kind, loving package and then allow them to go on their way with however they're going to do it.
So on to the next main question. Thank you for that. I think your observation, I think, was spot on. So with Right Blogger, how long have you been trying to build it up, and what have been one or two things that have been surprises to you on the journey with Right Blogger that you didn't anticipate?
First of all, tremendously surprised that people would pay me to use tools like this. Like that was a big surprise I found. But I started making some, you know, we really began by making free tools just on my blog back when, as soon as OpenAI like came out, ChatGPT was brand new. They started opening up an API to use their stuff. And so like it all became really easy to make tools like blog headline generators, idea generators, you know, article writers and stuff. And I say easy in air quotes. It's not easy, but it's a lot easier than it ever was before. And so like my business partner here, Andy, he has all the technical know-how and he learned a bunch in order to do this kind of stuff too. And so we had this really unique collision of like, oh wow, I've got an audience. And previously, you know, I'd steer people towards the Ahrefs, SEMrush, Mozes of the world, but those tools aren't really free. They aren't affordable if you want to upgrade, like get unlimited and stuff. And so we kind of just slowly began to validate this business and published a bunch of free tools on my blog. I promoted them to my audience. They were some of the most popular emails that I'd been sending in quite a while. And so seeing the replies, seeing the usage numbers, like that really told us, all right, maybe there's a business here at some point. So we began just kind of collecting email addresses, like for people that are interested in using tools, AI tools. Mm-hmm. And then before we built a super complex platform, so this is the difference in my advice that I just gave for something like software, SaaS, that is usually something that people are going to want to like pay for and then get immediately into. So not many people are going to prepay to join a waiting list for when your software is ready. They want to see what it is. So we spent a week and built a very basic MVP and then opened up the doors, said, hey, here's a 50% off. This is the cheapest this will ever be because it's brand new. And pretty much right away, we had about, what do we have? We had like between 50 and 100 people that signed up the very first week. And so
that's great. It's also a manageable amount, isn't it?
Right. And like, you know, that's a super heavy customer service load with people who are brand new to a brand new product. Like stuff's broken. There's bugs. There's things that can be improved like rather urgently. So we learned a lot and we've just kind of kept passively growing it largely from my audience and from my email list and from, you know, some affiliate partners now. That if I were to give another like surprise, it would be that affiliate program. Like now as I'm a company and have an affiliate program, I'm on the other end of this spectrum and I see just how useful it is to activate really good content creators in a space. And there's so many great people talking about online marketing and writing, blogging, the SEO, these kinds of topics that we all like discussing. And so I've been reaching out to people I know and people who have shows and being like, hey, do you think, you know, this product would be interesting to your audience? And that's gone really well.
I've not been able to look at WriteBlocker with the intensity that I normally do, because as I told you, Ryan, I've been traveling to windy Kansas. So, but I had a quick look a couple of times. So what are some of its key differentials? Because I've got the gentleman's name, but we had somebody else that seems to have a similar product as you that came on about 3 months ago, more of an SEO focus maybe. But what are some of the key differentials that you think why people choose WriteBlocker?
Honestly, one of the big ones is that my business partner Andy and I, we've been blogging for 12, 13 years each. And we really do know what works in our experience. We have probably around 100 websites in total that we kind of maintain and manage together. We reach millions of people a month. So we have like expertise that we bring to the table and we've gone super deep in engineering the prompts and the way that the tools function. I don't know if you guys have ever tried like Jasper or Copy AI, like those tools have gotten very, very flowy. So you show up and you start describing what you want and then it like wants to take you on a journey here and there. And we find that to be incredibly not useful. So the way you interact with our product is through specific tools, the article writer tool, the keyword research tool, the meta description generator. And there's some things that connect all the tools together and there's a chat interface so you can interact with kind of like a ChatGPT style thing. But for the most part, just making really simple and effective tools that creators can get something really tangible that's going to be pretty close to what they want in a matter of seconds or minutes. And really, like, our repurposing tools are what I think is beginning to attract more people. So there's a YouTube video to blog post generator. That's by far my favorite tool because I like to create video first now in my process. And so I'll create a YouTube video. I'll set it to unlisted so it's not totally public yet. And then I'll just come back to WriteBlogger and paste the link to the video into that tool. And it'll generate a really good first draft blog post. And that cuts out the entire need to write an article from start to finish that becomes a companion to this video. So keeping that kind of stuff going and getting more useful as we continue to build out the tools is what we're trying to focus on.
So I think what, just before we go to our break, I think what you're saying is it's really deep knowledge of your target market and building some core products, but then a religious fervor in slow improvements around those tools, gradual improvements from a feedback loop to make it a really truly polished and relevant tool to its target audience. Would I be about right?
Yeah. And we are creators. So these are tools by creators for creators. I think with a lot of the other AI creation platforms, you see like venture funded companies or people who go raise money or just, you know, tech entrepreneurs jumping in on this stuff. And that is okay. It just brings a different flavor to everything about the product and how it works and what the outputs are going to be. And so we actually, you know, do this stuff ourselves. We use these tools ourselves. And that is something that we notice, like a very clear difference in the outputs.
Well, thanks, Ryan. I really enjoyed the first half of the show. We've got some excellent questions for the second half. We're going to go for our mid-break and have a couple other messages from our WordPress sponsors that we really appreciate. We'll be back in a few moments, folks.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. We've had a great discussion with Ryan Robinson. It's been really insightful, I feel. Before we go into the second half of the show, folks, I just want to point out that I do a newsletter aimed at the WordPress community. I write it myself. I scour the internet to find the best WordPress and tech stories of the week. I bunny it all into this newsletter. I think it's quite original. Why don't you sign up for it? And you do get it by going over to wp-tonic.com/newsletter, wp-tonic.com/newsletter, and sign up, and it will be in your inbox on Mondays or Tuesdays, depending on how early I get up on the Monday. It just depends. But it will either be Monday or Tuesday morning. And we go over to you, Kurt.
Well, one of the things that's still stuck in my head from the 18 or 19 minute mark, so folks that are watching the replay, go back to 18 or 19 minutes ago, 18 or 19 minutes in the podcast. Ryan, when you were answering that question, you specifically used verbiage that Jonathan and I used in a show just last week, talking about, you know, pre-selling your course. So pre-selling your course, pre-selling your SaaS, pre-selling your, you hit on MVP, minimal viable product, get in some early adopters, get some paying customers, do intensive customer service to make sure that the early adopters are well cared for, right? And then try to organically grow. And I can't stress that enough that Jonathan and I, we talk about that all the time, and then to have a guest come on and just spit out that that's what they did.
This was not scripted either.
No, that's...
I'll send you the check after the show.
That part is really, really tremendous. The other thing I wanted to point to was, I think you've nailed something, and I hesitate to call out names of other products, but you know, there's an AI product that does like WordPress blogging. There's, I've used the Jasper that you mentioned by name, OpenAI, Claude. There's all these things, but they don't cater to a creator. It's like you have to train yourself to figure out how to use it and morph it to your purpose rather than it just being there for your purpose. And when I looked through the Right Blogger site, I was like, oh, this makes sense, because it broke into sections like, oh, I need help with SEO. Let's see what this looks like with SEO in it. Or let's see, maybe I got the wrong keywords, you know, and there was always a way to go, which I thought was pretty intuitive. So maybe I'll get in there and check it out further, but I was impressed with the way that happened. That said, what are the major problems that your team had putting all that together? I just picture you guys like a lot of infighting, like that's not the way that should work. Like, but you tell us, what were the major problems putting this thing together?
I mean, even from the starting point, it was a clear decision that we made to say, hey, what is the best, most effective way that we like to interact with AI? And when you go to ChatGPT or Jasper or some of these other tools, it's kind of like just a broad open ocean and you're in this tiny little boat and you're left to figure out, what do I do here? How do I get from, you know, point A to point B? And you have to know exactly what you want your point B to be. So with most AI interfaces, you have to have a really, really clear picture of what you want your output to be. And we wanted to take some of that pressure away from people, because I think that often inhibits a lot of creators from ever even trying. And so you'll pop open ChatGPT, you'll be like, oh, what the hell do I do? I don't think I'm going to do this now. So with our tools, like everything is really clearly structured through a specific flow. But I mean, gosh, the biggest hurdle has been, we've been trying to figure out how to add Teams accounts, because there's a frequent request we get where, you know, bloggers, creators, small business owners, there's a lot of like marketing agencies. We kind of cut a broad swath of people who use this, but one common theme is like, hey, I'd love for my VA to be able to get in here and generate, you know, the first draft articles for next month's content, or come up with all my social copy. And people don't want a password share. They want permissions, you know, their VA to be able to see this kind of stuff, but not this stuff. So figuring out all the minutiae of how to essentially handle a more scaled software business rather than just the, you know, individual blogger customer. But as we get more complex needs, it becomes difficult to figure out how to structurally handle all that. It's fascinating.
As a follow-up, how much of what you guys have assembled, like I'm looking in that page of features, right? Features and products. How much of that is client generated? Like it was a feature request and you knew you had to build it, as opposed to what you guys knew to put together?
Pretty close to 50-50. Like coming back to our conversation here around MVPs, and really, like, I like to think of this as monetizing with my audience. And so I have a pretty good idea of what a lot of people will need, because this is a product that I use myself. I am my own target market for this, which is important, but I also don't know everything. And there's going to be use cases that I've never even dreamed of, but maybe 10,000 other people have all the time. So asking for feedback really often, like we send emails even to people who sign up, and in the onboarding sequence, there's, you know, requests for feedback. And hey, if you see something that even just feels a little weird, or you think it could be better, like let us know. And so we have this feedback.writeblogger.com. It's a feature board basically. And people can pop in, send requests, upvote them. And it's actually like a shockingly active little community of people who are upvoting stuff, commenting, being like, oh my God, yes, I need this. And so we get to see people actually voting with what they believe are the most important things to change and add. And Andy is my partner here. He is crazy. Like he will see a feature request or an idea come through, and if it's simple enough, he'll just reply, you know, 5 minutes later, this is live now, which is remarkable. So we find that the people who have any sort of individual interaction with us, whether it's something product related with Andy, or people reach out to me all the time, ask blogging questions, Right Blogger customers can book a free 30-minute call with me, and we end up doing advice kind of stuff. So I think that's really another unique competitive advantage we bring to the table is that, hey, you have access to people who run, you know, close to 100 successful websites and use us.
Yeah. I'll toss it back to you, Jonathan.
Yeah, I thought I'd ask you this one or two questions because based on my own experience at WP Tonic, when I was starting, one of the added services as part of the Hosting Plus vision I had, right, was I thought I would offer video hosting as part of the package, which would save people money and be more useful to my target audience. So I scoured the internet and I found a third-party provider that would allow me to white label their core service and offer it to my customers because I didn't want to build it out from the ground up, right? And thank God I didn't because the clients weren't interested, right? And they, a lot of them had pre-bought a Vimeo package or they were only going to use YouTube, which I think is great in the right circumstances, but I wouldn't generally advise somebody to host their videos on a paid course on YouTube. But they weren't interested. And after about a year, I let it die, basically. I had a couple clients on it, and I said, well, you're going to have to find them. We'll give you some money back. And I let it die. Have there been a couple of things that you thought people were going to really be really crazy about and they were a bit indifferent and that surprised you?
Not with WriteBlogger, but I've had... So anytime I want to build a course over the past 10 years, I have always used this like validation framework. And I have a post on my blog. I think it's just ryrob.com/validate and it'll go to that post. But I have this framework that I follow and there's nothing super crazy unique about it. It's common sense stuff. It's based on a lot of like Silicon Valley entrepreneurs kind of breaking their process down. And it's essentially around like getting X number of people, whatever feels right, to pay me for the thing before I build it and give them a heavy discount, like make it worth their while. But I would always send out an email to my audience. I'd do a series of blog posts to see if I could drive some organic traffic and validate the topic through search. But I wanted to make sure that I had either a waiting list of, you know, several hundred people for a course, or people would pre-purchase the course and, you know, maybe it's $50 for a course that's eventually going to be $297 or something. But seeing people vote with their wallets is always the best thing. And I've had course topics that I thought were going to be total bangers. Like I did this one on how to
how to
pitch yourself as a freelancer, essentially. And there's a whole bunch of stuff kind of layered into what pitching yourself as a freelancer is like. But at the core was like generating proposals and doing like how to be on Zoom and pitch people, stuff like that. And I thought that was going to be great. Like I was like, oh man, tons of freelancers are going to want this. And I did a series of blog posts around it. And it was just like mild interest, you know, filmed a trailer for the course. Like here's what it's going to cover and then pre-order. And I think maybe one out of, and I have a lot of people that are freelancers like on my email list and in my community. And you know, let's say there were 30,000 people who are freelancers on my email list, one pre-ordered the course. And that was after a few weeks of planning and prep for this kind of little pre-marketing push. And rather than like ignore what my data was telling me, I was like, all right, I'm gonna let this one be and explore some other topics. And that was a good move.
Did you ever work in your mind why you got that reaction? Do you ever make any sense your mind what was about?
With that one, I honestly just kind of moved on. I have not thought about it much since. But I don't like
with it was it was a child that you just decided to forget about, was it?
Exactly. I mean, yeah. I also learned something about myself through that experience, which is equally as important. It was that, okay, I ran up against the first hurdle and I don't feel like trying to figure my way out beyond that first challenge. And so that was another signal of like, well, I don't think I'm as invested in this topic either. So I moved on.
Fair enough. Over to you, Kurt, again.
I'm just amazed at how wise those words are.
I think they raised tonight a lot with Kurt, actually.
You know, when you have a passion project and you know for sure you've got the best thing in the world, it's really hard to just let it go, right? But you, if you don't have a willing audience, if they don't recognize the pain point or they elevate themselves above thinking they need the training, it's just not going to happen. And so, you know, props to you for recognizing it and cutting it loose when you did. You've mentioned AI a ton, and obviously it's the backbone of what you're talking about today. But where do you see it? Like, there's the Joe Rogan types that say AI is a god in the next 4 years. You know, it's going to be thinking for us and running governments and all these things, right? And then there's other people that go, no, AI is a fad. It's going to go away. And I know that there's somewhere in the middle of those two extremes that makes sense. But where do you fall? Like, where do you think AI is going to help business, including your own, but then also for scrubs like me?
Well, if we're plotting a line graph here, right, to take us back to high school geometry, Joe Rogan's over here and, you know, the AI is dumb, always will be dumbs over here. I am a little more, I'm in the middle, right? So I'm definitely in the middle. I'm a little more on the like optimistic futurist side, I'd say. Like, I do think that there are going to be unpredictably cool and unique use cases as this stuff continues to develop. I don't think in 4 years there's going to be a bionic man that's living forever because everything will just be continually regenerated. I think some of that stuff is just like, if you zoom out and look at history, technology, like there's hype cycles and then there's disillusionment cycles. And I think we're just in such a unique hype cycle. Like, sure, it always feels different to the people who are going through it in the present, but how different is it really? I think it is different. Like, I think this is the first, perhaps, version of self-learning technology where we will have things that can teach itself and continue like learning at like an exponential level. So I think that that does throw some variables in here that we just don't know how it's going to go. But I think like things that are repetitive and don't require a ton of like human feeling and creativity, those are the kinds of things that, at least in the short term, I think will continue to get better and better addressed by AI.
I find my own opinion of AI to be constantly in flux. And in that regard, I'm really glad I'm a person that's open to change. Like 18 to 24 months ago, we were reporting here that, you know, Google was changing the rules. And if you had a lot of AI content, you were to get downgraded for SEO and you're not, nothing. And then all of a sudden it was like, no, AI is in everything, right? So now it's how are you going to downgrade stuff if it's part of the stinking software that comes, you know, on your platform? And then just trying to think about where it's going, like, because they have their own, right? They've, what is it, Gemini? And then we've got OpenAI. And so if they're participating, who are they to downgrade the end product if they're participating the tools to make it? And so it's been really interesting to say, okay, so we know that people that can prompt well are going to do well for a certain span. But then there's also the other end of the spectrum where a subject matter expert, an actual human, is going to bring a lot of value because they kind of fact check or whatever the AI results. How, I'm asking you to be a soothsayer here. I'm asking you to be a futurist, but
I got something for you.
How do you see that future shaping out for people that have skills?
I think essentially here's what really changed. With the proliferation of AI, video overnight just became so much more important than it ever has been before. And video has always been important. It's been a really fantastic way to educate, to connect with people. Like for people watching this video, how much more connected do you feel to us than just reading a blog post, right? Like there's such a different experience that other humans have when they know they're interacting with another human, even if it's just a one-way watching of a video. So I know that I find that personally as a consumer of video content. And I do not believe that AI will be able to really comprehensively, perfectly pull off, you know, imitation video, let's say, in the short term. I think that there's going to be small ways. There's editing tools, right, that can kind of change the way your mouth moves and make it look like you say a different word if you got to edit a script. And there's going to be use cases like that that I think will be useful. But as humans, we have evolved over the course of tens of thousands of years, and we are pros at detecting things that feel unnatural and just look just a little bit off. And maybe we can't put our finger on it. But it's clear.
I get that reaction from a lot of people. You have that chill. Just a follow-up question about that. I know this is going to be surprising, Ryan, but I do think. I've been thinking, with the internet, we've had this enormous access to information, Wikipedia, you know, what you used to have to just go to a library, a university, or go to a public library and search for a number of books and read them and spend days. And, you know, the main thing about going to university was like learning things by rote, enormous assumption of facts. And really, you don't have to do that. Now, what's in your phone? You got access to endless information from your phone. But what hasn't happened is that I thought there was going to be an enormous explosion in people's ability, the ability to learn things and become. But that hasn't seemed to have happened. There seems to be a lot of people that don't have many skills or feel they haven't. Do you think, is that something you thought about? What do you feel you want to comment on what I've just outlined? Only a small question, Ryan.
Yeah, the small stuff. This is the small stuff. No, this, I do believe this gets into some really interesting human nature stuff. So most people, myself included, it is really hard to continue trying to learn a skill or process, technique, whatever, and go super deep into it if you're not genuinely, truly captivated and interested by it. There is no way to fake that. And so you have to find ways to either like carrot yourself into a new skill that's daunting and looks a little scary, but you got to get through the front door and see if you're actually enjoying it. Can this become like an act of creation, like the ability to be creative with it, video editing, whatever, you know, these things look like for you. But I do think that a lot of people are stuck in the consumption loop as well. So you're going to watch, you know, you're going to take a course and never actually take action based on it. You're going to watch a YouTube tutorial and never do something with it. You're just on to the next, you know, video in your feed. And so I think there's some really interesting stuff going on with human psychology. And if I could offer any advice on how to combat that a little bit, from my experience, has been really restricting use of my phone. And like, I go through phases of not having social media even on my phone. This is someone who like creates a bunch of content, right? I don't consume that much. I still like, I listen to some podcasts that I've loved for a long time, and like discovery of new ones is always interesting too. But I really like, I keep my consumption time to a super minimum each day. Like, I use the limits on the iPhone that are like, oh, you've got 5 minutes on Instagram, make best use of it, dude. And it helps a lot.
I think you touched something, the emotional side of learning. I think there's a lot of emphasis on access and quality of material, but I think you're onto something there, the emotional side of learning. I think that's what you were touching. I'm going to leave the last question to Kurt. So Kurt, if you don't.
I finally have an excuse for why I can build websites but have no idea how the thermostat in my house works.
That's exactly it. You're just not interested. Sorry.
Just not interested. So if you had a time machine, either an H.G. Wells thing or you know, the TARDIS from Doctor Who, You could go back, like magically, you could just go back to the beginning of your career. What advice would you give yourself, man?
The first thing I'll say is that I wouldn't change anything because I've had to experience it in this really specific set of sequences. But if I could whisper some advice, I would whisper, take video more seriously. If I could have started 10, 12 years ago with making video first and then writing as kind of the supplement and redistribution, another way for people to interact with me, I think that would have opened up just a ton of different opportunities that would have been so unpredictable. But now is always going to be the best time to start video. So if you haven't started it yet, try it out now, maybe tomorrow.
Excellent. Jonathan, do you have anything to finish up with?
No, Ryan, it's been a pleasure having you in the show. I think we've had a very broad discussion, haven't we? We've covered a lot of topics, but my tribe says that's what they like. So you've been a great guest. I think it's been a great conversation. If you want to support the show, tribe, please just share this interview on other social platforms and maybe consider joining the WP Tonic YouTube channel and subscribe to that. We'll be back next week with our monthly roundtable show. We've got Jason Cohen, the founder of WP Engine, as one of our special guests, and somebody else who I'll probably rustle up. Jason's always got some great insights, so it'll be fantastic in part of the roundtable panel. But we also got some fantastic guests in July. We'll be back soon. See you soon, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.